I'm expecting I would say to people, if you're not sure, ask yourself, am I being selfish? Am I being self-sacrificial? Or am I being self-honoring? And this is something that most people cannot define because they cannot define it. They don't know what being selfish looks like. They don't know what self-honoring looks like. They don't know what self-sacrificial looks like. So it is important to clearly define those three. And then one will be able to discern if their actions are in fact codependent or independent or interdependent. You know, in a relationship, we look for interdependency as opposed to codependency. And a lot of the time, it's very sad. People think they're being selfish, and they're actually not at all.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
Vanessa Embriolo is an advanced EFT tapping matrix practitioner, advanced neuromodulator, and addiction recovery specialist for over 20 years. V coaches both adults and teens one-on-one and runs life-altering workshops, and with the aim of teaching conscious awareness, finding empathy, and self-love. In this episode, we dig into the topic of codependence. Believe it or not, we're all codependent on some level, but understanding what it actually is and where it is sabotaging your relationships is one of the keys to living a happier life. V can be contacted directly via her website and via Facebook and Instagram. All contact details are in the show description. If you're enjoying the Reinvent Health podcast, please help me to reach more people by rating and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And don't forget to share it with your friends, colleagues, and family. So Vanessa, or Vila V, thank you so much for joining me today on the Reinvent Health podcast. What I want to do before we get into our topic today, which is codependence, and this is a very, I think, misunderstood term, much like narcissism is also used a lot out of context, is introducing you to our audience. Who are you? Where did you come from? What is your background? And how did you get into the space of holding space for other people?
So Nick, first of all, thank you so much. It is such a privilege because, as you know, I've been a fan for quite a while. And I also just have to give you a shout out with so much gratitude for the awareness that you bring to the public on the very important topics that you cover. So thank you. Thank you. And thank you for this wonderful honor. Okay, so who's Vila V? and by the way, the nickname was a friend actually saved me as that in his phone. And I kept it because it's a play on word in French, which is live life. And I spent a large portion of my life existing until I decided one day that I actually wanted to live and not exist. Yeah. And I kind of got the nickname at the same time, which of course is no surprise because I totally believe in manifestation and synchronicity. And I've kept it because it's me. So who is V? She's a little bundle of energy, like a little feisty fairy that sprinkles magical fairy dust wherever she goes. She loves to motivate and inspire, as well as indulge in her own space and nurture time. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty convinced she has wings, and I'm going to be honest and say I don't think they're for flying. Hashtag just saying. But you know what? Taking it to me, to V, I wasn't always in that space. I went through my own challenges and my own demons and my own difficulties. You know, growing up in the typical colorful upbringing, alcoholic dad who died when I was 13. My mom's always been the original bionic woman, absolutely amazing, huge inspiration for me. But of course, I grew up with that need to protect her and save her and fix everything for her. So having missed out probably on very important peer interaction at some point of my life. And I can tell you that I was a full-blown codependent. At this point, Nick, I know we're going to mention it later, but you're absolutely correct. There is such a misunderstanding around codependency, narcissism, empath, and all of that. And the reality is that there's no defined, you know, we all degrees of everything. So when I say I was a full-blown codependent, I will say that I was very much a full-blown codependent with some of the toxic traits as well. Was I aware of it? Absolutely not. Okay. And I was very codependent in my marriage, you know, being married for 16 years. Very, very happy to report I've been divorced for 7 years. Not happy that I've been divorced for 7 years, but happy to report that ex-hubby and I have a fantastic relationship, and he's a wonderful dad to our 14-year-old son. And that alone to me is a huge testament of the fact that the work that I do, that I've engaged and embraced, and all the different modalities and formulas do work. Because I can tell you now, I am definitely 20,000 versions upgraded from when I walked out of my marriage. So I don't particularly like to use the word change a person. I like to use the word grow, and I like to use the word change your reaction to life. Change how you look at the world, and the world changes. Correct. So, I mean, I could go on about me for hours. But I can honestly, honestly state to the entire world that I'm in an exceptionally good space in my life. I love myself very much. I love all aspects of me, even the crappy ones that I sometimes have to take to task. You probably know about my workshop, Meeting Your Inner Committee. Yes. So important. Brilliant. We have all these archetypes living inside of us. Mm-hmm. And that realization for me has been pretty life-changing. It's something that I've put together over time. So I think, yeah, but I think what sums me up is I'm a bundle of energy. I love to inspire. I no longer want to fix. I want to assist, and I want to be able to be the evidence that we can all find joy. Absolutely, we can.
Absolutely. That is so inspiring, because very few people can say that they love themselves and that they are comfortable with themselves. And that takes a whole lot of work to do. So you've clearly been through a whole lot of shits to get to a point where you can sit
and then some
in your own skin and go, I'm comfortable with who I am. I understand myself. And that's, I think we're all striving for that. So before we get into the topic of today, can you take us through, I mean, you are qualified in dozens of therapy modalities. And can you just take us through where that all started for you and the therapies that really you found that came to the fore and that you use as tools in your therapeutic practice today?
The first modality that I was introduced to was EFT tapping, so emotional freedom technique. And that we're going back probably about, I think it's about 16, 17 years now. Through a friend, I came across the book, The Journey by Brandon Bays, which I absolutely loved because, again, you know, power of the mind and, again, self-love and whatnot. Please bearing in mind that 16 years ago, I wasn't anywhere near as evolved emotionally as I am now. And through that, Brandon Bays was actually in the country and I wanted to do the workshop. And somebody said to me, you know what, I know one better. I know a wonderful woman, Lana Ackerman, who does the actual journey. So I went to see her for the journey, but it actually turned out that she was an EFT practitioner, master trainer. And I loved this EFT. I just couldn't believe the results. I couldn't believe, obviously, with the NLP foundation, which we use with the EFT, it started to shift major things. So I actually did my first practitioner's course then, and I was using it a lot on myself. But, you know, you get married and life begins and you kind of put things on the back burner. And, you know, we also can't force things. If we're not ready, we're just not ready. So I carried on with the EFT. I then did the advanced. And interimly, I was always researching and testing things out and doing various courses. But I'm obviously going to focus on the ones that really define the work that I do. And then when I, so fast forward quite a few years, when I got divorced, I finally did all the exams that I needed for the advanced EFT practitioner training. But by this stage, I mean, I had loads of hours under my belt. I'd worked with so many people. And really, my mentor, Lana, is phenomenal, that I think I'm one of her little proteges. You know, it kind of just, like, it's just ingrained in me. I don't remember life without the EFT, but I wanted to explore further. And Dr. Ian Weinberg, who I know you know well, has been one of my heroes since he did my first back operation back in 2007, after I think my first or second miscarriage, whatever the case was. And I remember just thinking, wow, I wonder like how many years I'll have to study in order for me to be able to qualify to do his Triangles Model Academy course, because I've always been a massive fan of his work. It's just It's outstanding. It's on another level. And there's actually not a lot like it. There's aspects of it, but I mean, especially as archetypes, you just can't beat that. So a couple of years ago, I went to see him. We've always had a very good rapport. I mean, he proceeded to do 4 operations on me, but hey, I'm great now, 10 years down the line, I think, because I really love myself now. And because of all the experience that I'd had already, I'd started the coaching a few years back, but not full time. He was quite happy for me to do the course. He felt quite comfortably that I fitted all the criteria. And so I did. And I very quickly went on to do the advanced neuromodulators course as well, because I was just eating the stuff for breakfast. I was just obsessed with it, and then became very, very, very blessed in living out one of my biggest dreams, where I actually got to present a couple of workshops with him. And at that point, next, I realized, you know what? Anything is possible. Like, absolutely anything is possible. And I realized that anything was possible because of all the work I'd done on myself over the years, and loving myself and knowing what I wanted for myself. It all just really does fall into place. Yeah. And yeah. I still absolutely embrace it with so much love and so much gratitude. I never take anything for granted. And then next, there was still this thing about my absolute passion about codependency, because I discovered CODA after my divorce. And CODA is Codependence Anonymous. Would you know? Most people are like, what? There's a group for codependence? I'm like, hell, honey. Yep. Yes, sirree. And that group taught me quite a lot, but I exited when the time was right. And I thought, so I contacted CODA, but there's actually, you can't do a course per se. You know, you can hold the groups like I'd done in the past, and you can kind of, be a sponsee, an accountability partner, whatever, but you don't quite get qualified, if you know what I mean. So I thought, okay, well, what's the next best thing? And I thought, well, what is codependency? Codependency is the thing that underlines every single addictive behavior. Yes. So I started doing a lot of research, and I found UACT, who I did my addiction recovery speciality through. And that was also just one of the most fantastic journeys I've ever been on. It taught me so much and so beautiful, because sometimes you think, you know, you research and it often seems the same things over and over. It's just semantics. But besides the fact that I found a whole new family, and online, I might add, they're all over the world, but what an amazing group. And yeah, so I specialize in an addiction recovery specialist as well, because the bottom line is at the core of every addiction lies codependency. And because I can bring it in and it becomes relatable, I really find that it helps to shift people. So yeah, so basically those were my three major ones. The neuromodulation with the triangles model. Obviously, everything I do kind of is underlined by NLP, because NLP, as you know, Nick, is a language. Mm-hmm. And when you speak NLP, really life changes. Yes. So the EFT, the NLP, the triangles model, and the addiction recovery. And as you say, with lots of other sideline things that I do, like shadow work and, Wheel of Life and all sorts of tools that I throw in.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That is complete. That's so extensive. But I guess, I know from personal experience, when you start looking into or you start studying, it's really impossible to stop, because everything does feed into everything else. And these are all tools that you can put together to help people, become who they're supposed to be. So yeah, I don't think it ever ends, but interesting, how you found the addiction and the codependence, because the lay person doesn't realize this, and whether that addiction is, it doesn't have to be drugs and alcohol. We can be addicted to people, addicted to shopping, addicted to online shopping. That's well known. Addicted to sugar. it's obviously feeding you on some level. So let's frame what codependence actually is, and let's start there. Let's start with that.
Okay, so codependency, ultimately, Nick, the other words that are used, the other phrases I should say, is love addiction. So absolutely an addiction to people, and self-love deficiency disorder. And those really spoke volumes to me, because I realized there was a massive self-love deficiency, and I understand it more now than ever. I mean, I've understood it all the time. But so basically, what is codependency? Codependency is needing to be seen in order to feel like you exist. It's needing to be needed. Basically, it's the validation. If you validate my existence, then I exist. Otherwise, you know, most of my clients, Nick, I ask them, who is Nikki? And I get the deer in headlights. Like, what do you mean, who's Nikki? I'm like, tell me about Nikki. And so many people are defined by just their roles as moms or in their business, or very few people actually stop to assess who they are, what their core is. And there is such a self-love deficiency out there. And I can understand why. And I think, sure, I mean, the generation of our kids who, you know, going into teens, I'm very grateful my son has the mom that he does, because yes. I keep him aware. Yes. It's frightening because everything is about measuring, you know, against something else.
But this is really terrifying because, you know, when you said, you know, we use something to validate our worthiness, it just freaks me out that, you know, the thought of Instagram and TikTok and so many people validate their worthiness depending on how many likes they get, how many views they get, and they feel good about themselves if they're getting this kind of attention. So this need to feel good enough is playing out in so many places. And it's, you know, I think we're all codependent on something to an extent. All of us. I don't think anyone can get away without this.
So absolutely.
It's not like you can categorize a certain specific kind of person who is an alcoholic or a drug addict. We're all codependent on something at least some point in our lives, if not right through our lives. And learning to recognize that is what's going to set you free to an extent, you know, from or at least start helping you understand your motivation for doing what you do.
So I love what you said. It's the motivation. I always say to people, when you do something, stop and ask yourself, what is my agenda? What is my agenda behind what I'm doing? You know, and the reality is, you know this, Nick, I'm not a fan of social media at all, but I find it's a necessary evil. It's so useful and so important for so many things, you know, and yes, to share events and whatnot. But I look at posts and it sickens me and also breaks my heart, because you're absolutely right, how people totally gauge their worth by how many likes they are getting and what responses they are getting. I've worked with teens who've been destroyed by the fact that, you know, they had one post that just didn't have a lot of likes and the friends one did. And it's all about out there, and there's nothing happening in here. And I can tell you, when you transcend that, and I'll speak from experience, I used to love being the center of attention, next, oh my gosh. And look, I never had to try very hard. I'm loud, I'm boisterous, I'm energetic. But it's funny because now it still happens because I'm still loud and boisterous because that's who I am. But sometimes I almost want to shy away from it because I really don't need it or want it, for that matter. I don't mind it. But as opposed to way back when, where I thrived on it, that was my dopamine. That was my fix. You know, I was seen. I was something. I was cool. Now I'm like, guys, this is me. Take it or leave it. And it is really the most fulfilling feeling, because when you love yourself, you know, I always say you vibrate, or rather you generate what you vibrate. And I can tell you that the my tribe, my team, is pretty awesome. And even better, we call each other on our shit, you know, because we're all just normal humans. Well, I don't know what normal is, but you know, we're all human.
Just human.
And Nick, you're absolutely right. So it's that constant need for validation, either from a partner or from social media. And codependency can be, you know, I work with clients that are completely codependent on their bosses, but yet have actually a really healthy relationship with their partners. It's mind-boggling. And then I have people that are totally codependent on their parents, but the codependency with their partners is not the same. There's going to be, you know, a bit of a spillover. Because there's a codependency. But Nick, you're absolutely right. We all codependents. We all have an addiction to something. Anybody that says, I have no addictions, I would go as far as saying, is probably not in denial, is just probably a bit
unaware.
Absolutely. And you know what? Like you said, even narcissism, Nick, we all need a little bit of everything in us. I mean, my little narcissist is alive and well, but she only comes out when I need her. And boy, she does a good job. She does a good job, girlfriend. Then I'm like, okay, back in your box. Back in your box. You've done what you needed to do. You can go.
But you're aware of that. It's not, you know, the danger comes in when I think when we deny these parts of ourselves. That's where they become monsters.
And that's exactly it.
Yeah. So let's just...
The shadows, exactly. The shadows,
so yep. Let's just take a nip backward and start with self-love, because I think that's also very misunderstood. It's not about having an ego. In fact, it's quite the opposite of an egoist frame. So how would you define self-love?
So, Nick, the most important thing for me to find, to really get into that place of self-love, was to connect with my little girl. And I'm not talking as in my little girl living inside me, because I don't have a daughter, I have a son. That was probably my biggest challenge. I was very hard on her, as you know, as I decided, because you know what? There was no space for her to be a little girl. You know, she had to put on her big girl panties and suck it up. And this was the belief system that I lived with. And it was very hard for me. Then I must tell you what was even harder is when I did eventually have that breakthrough and integrate it, which I have beautiful systems and modalities that I've created. Some I've learned, some I've created myself. Was the not then beating myself up for having been so hard on her. So it's like, okay, so I've fixed one thing, now I've got to deal with the other one. And then, of course, you kind of balance it all out. And now she's my chick. Oh, my gosh, she's my sounding board. She's my chick. But this love and protectiveness that I have over her is overwhelmingly exquisite. And I can tell you that until people find that and integrate that, it's difficult to love yourself. I've had people in my workshop that go, oh, I love myself. And I go, what about your little kid? And they look at me, and short of them going white and me handing them a vomit bag, I'm not even kidding. They just know. So how deep does the self-love go? You know? So that's the starting point, you know, for me.
What came up for me as you were saying that is, I've often heard that our parents' voices as a child become our inner dialogue. So if the feedback you're getting from your two parents as a child, especially as a young child from, I'd say from about, you know, 3 years old to about 10, 11, 12, is you're not good enough, it's negative, you're bad, you've got to be better at, that becomes your dialogue. And you sort of ingrain or frame yourself as not being enough. So
100%.
And when you say you've got to talk to that child in you, it's about changing the vocabulary your parents fed you and change that neurological map in our own brains going back to childhood, which sounds woo-woo, but it's actually it's anything but. This is very scientifically validatable. Where we can change our internal mapping. So that's where it starts.
Absolutely, Nixon. I mean, the triangles model, totally. I mean, Dr. Weinberg's got all the hard evidence to prove that. And that's where the neuroplasticity begins, when we start to rewire our brain. And, you know, the reality is, Nixon, I mean, I know you know this, it's not just our parents. Teachers, oh, my God. Teachers should be shocked. Sorry, teachers, for all the good ones out there. But I feel that very stringent psychometric testing should be done on teachers, especially in the lower grades, you know, bearing in mind that, you know, I saw the damage that was done to me, Nix. I can talk about two teachers. They're probably lucky that I can't track them down, because my little girl and I would have words.
If I had to find some of these women that I was, I would sit them down and give them one hell of a debriefing.
I remember the names. I dare not mention them. But, you know, they do a lot of damage. If you think about how much time they spend with us, you know, and that's in our second most formative nurture period, like age naught to 6 or 7, depending which school of thought you're coming from. I always say give or take 12 months, let's be honest, you know. And then, of course, also the third nurture period, which goes into the teens and into puberty, you know, where you flip and let's be honest, we don't know if we're coming or going when we hit puberty. You know, it's hard. So that is major. And obviously, environment, TV, radio, articles, and now there's social media, you know, constantly telling us your skin's not glowing because you don't have 67 filters on, you know, and it does, it becomes exceptionally, exceptionally taxing. And we take on all these voices. And my workshop, if I may just mention, Nix, the meeting your inner committee, making friends with the voices in your head, was really an experiment that I put together, because a couple of people kept saying to me, V, how do you do this? How do you have these conversations with yourself and work through your stuff? And I thought, well, why don't I just teach people how I do this? So I put this workshop together as an experiment, and it was such a hit. And I show them exactly where the voices come from and who the voices are. They're not us. 90% of them are not us. However, we choose to keep who we want. And we go through a very, very fun exercise. It's a half day workshop, but it's really, really life changing for people because all of a sudden they're going, hold on, is that actually true?
Yeah.
Who told me that? Mm. Where did that come from? You know, so for me, I can tell you my parents were very loving. I mean, my mom, we could do no wrong in my mother's eyes to this day. She's a real good Italian mom, real codependent, as in like she just wants to be there for her kids. You know what I mean? She needs nothing, but she must do everything for her kids. But the reality is, Nix, because she was looking after everybody else, what did I do? I mimicked her. I needed to look after her and everybody else. So yes, I took it on. We're a product of our parents and our environment. Doesn't mean we have to be defined by it forever, or let alone be prisoners of it.
No, we mirror our parents. We don't do what they tell us to do. We do what they do. And until you realize that, you're stuck, you know, in a trap of your own making. But everyone's free to change their story.
Absolutely. And I'm living proof. And that's what I love about, you know, Nix, I've said it so many times. If I had to change a single thing, a single one of my traumas or my difficulties or my challenges, and it risked me not sitting here right now talking to you, I wouldn't take that risk. But I am the evidence that you can absolutely transcend it. You can. And I've seen it in my work. I've seen it with the people I work with. Makes my story look like child's play, really looks like my story looks like Little House in the Prairie. And I've seen people come through it. It's a choice. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's not easy, but it's doable.
So how do we help people listening to define where in their lives they are exhibiting some kind of codependence?
Well, again, I think if one starts by what's the agenda about behind my action, you know, and asking themselves, is there a hole that I'm trying to fill with what I'm doing? How do I feel about me, myself, and my child? You know, those kind of questions, to be honest, I think most people know. I think the ones that don't probably don't want to see it, I'll be very honest. People aren't always ready. You know, when clients come to me, we do an assessment, there's a checklist. I don't need to do the checklist because I can tell by the first 5 minutes of a conversation and I'm generally accurate. There's obviously various things we can do, but codependency is in all of us. And I think if one looks at their environment, I think if you just look around you and see how are my relationships, how do I feel on a daily basis, how much joy have I actually got, how honest am I with myself? And this is a huge one, Nix. Oh, we are so good at lying to ourselves and distorting and deleting and living in denial. So I think it's fairly easy to assess.
Okay, so I mean, some of the things that I can think of just listening to is if you are the kind of person who avoids conflict, for example, because you want to keep the peace, that is a form of codependence because we are
absolutely
almost manipulating the environment and the people in it so we can keep being liked or being seen to be a certain person. You know, another way of doing that is to almost minimize what or reduce what you're looking for, what your needs, what you're liking, what you want. So that somebody else can be happy, so that the mood in the family or at work is conducive to everyone getting on. And those are things that we think is normal, give and take human behavior. But if it starts to diminish your quality of life and you start losing yourself in the process, that's when it becomes a problem. And I think every adult listening to this can definitely relate to losing themselves and putting their needs sort of behind those other people who are important to them. Well, I think what it does then is also creates resentment. It does trigger issues. So what are your thoughts about those sort of everyday behaviors that we think are a normal part of just interacting with people that are actually disguising a bigger problem?
So Nix, you're absolutely accurate in everything that you've said. And there's two things that I apply to my work. So one is the oxygen mask theory. But the reality is, as codependents, we're generally so busy trying to save everybody else because we have this belief that if everybody else is okay, we can be okay. It's bullshit because by the time we get to the last person, we probably have run out of oxygen. So what's the point? So we have to be okay first. And I mean everybody. And as a little girl, I started flying on my own from a very young age to go and see my grandparents every year overseas. And I remember I used to think, God, how cheeky is the air hostess telling the adults to put the mask on first? I was like, we're kids, we're important. So here's a typical internal dialogue of me going, the airlines don't care about the children. As I grew up, I realized, of course they care about the children. If the adults can't help us, we are completely helpless, right? So if we don't put the oxygen mask on first, how are we going to help anybody? We need to help ourselves first. And I think it's very important that people stop and go, am I putting on the oxygen mask first?
Precisely.
That's the first and very important point. Is it the most important? It comes very close to what I'm going to say next. I always say to people, if you're not sure, ask yourself, am I being selfish? Am I being self-sacrificial? Or am I being self-honoring? And this is something that most people cannot define because they cannot define it. They don't know what being selfish looks like. They don't know what self-honoring looks like. They don't know what self-sacrificial looks like. So it is important to clearly define those three. And then one will be able to discern if their actions are in fact codependent or independent or interdependent. You know, in a relationship, we look for interdependency as opposed to codependency. And a lot of the time, it's very sad. People think they're being selfish, and they're actually not at all.
Sure.
They're being self-honoring. But they've been so indoctrinated and taken on these limiting beliefs that they're like, what I'm doing is selfish. It's actually not. It's self-honoring. And if you do the opposite, you'll be self-sacrificing.
Now, what happens when my codependence meets your codependence? You know, we choose people in our lives who, on a subliminal level, we can recognize something. It's not overt, a behavior or a tendency or a way of, or a mannerism. And our subliminal, sort of signaling will recognize this undercurrent in another person. And you often see people say, oh, I married my mother, I married my father, because the behavior.
Always.
You know, exactly. So we make choices based on what's safe and familiar. We don't make choices based on what's actually going to work in the long term, unless we're really conscious of doing that. So what happens, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this with your clients numerous times, is what happens when we start, we don't know, firstly, that the upsets and the explosions in a relationship are because our codependent tendencies are bumping heads all the time. So what's a really good way of, first you've got to recognize it in yourself before you can recognize it in somebody else. But what happens when that happens? And just as a second part to that question is, what if that no longer works? I mean, surely then the relationship has to end or take on a different flavor altogether. What are your experiences with that?
So bottom line is, where there's a codependent, there is categorically, and I don't state a lot of things categorically, going to be either another codependent or a narcissist or an addict. Bottom line. So the reality is, depending on the level, and generally it's not going to be a very healthy one, there's going to be a level of toxicity. So there's going to be the head knocking. The other thing I wanted to say is that there's, of course, the trauma bonding. And as you say, that's overt. The other thing, of course, is we have this wonderful psychological phenomenon called, I don't know if it's a psychological phenomenon, but anyway, we have repetition compulsion. So we are brought to constantly repeat our childhood situations subconsciously, trying to change them. The problem is we don't have the tools because we don't have the awareness. And I see this all the time. For example, you'll have somebody getting married and they'll say, no, I didn't marry my father because my husband's an alcoholic. But when we break it down, the husband is just as moody and aggressive as the father was. And in fact, take away the alcohol, the pattern is the same. And he's got an addiction of other sorts, for example. So I think it's very quickly to recognize when there's an issue in a relationship. Again, we can deny it all we want. But I put together actually a 75-point checklist of codependency versus interdependency, and it's something that I share with my clients. So that, and in fact, and it applies both to, there's a section that applies to both romantic and any relationship, and one that's specifically romantic. But Nick, you said it already. For example, if you are hiding parts of yourself for fear of rejection, you know that you're in a codependent relationship. If you feel defined by the way this person, this partner, feels about you, you know that you're codependent. If you're putting all your hobbies and interests aside to appease them. So appeasement, I say, look, in business, we've got to appease. Let's be honest. You know, we've got to compromise. But in a relationship, as you say, we're going to appease. It's going to lead to resentment. What happens next? So either you stay together in a terribly toxic, awful relationship where you're constantly pulling each other down, and that becomes the push-pull. And quite frankly, I think hell would probably be better. But people choose it because why? It's an uncomfortable comfort zone. It's what they know. It's what they know how to navigate. And the fear of the unknown takes big cojones. It does, Nix, but I can tell you that I'm living proof once again that if you just take that little leap of faith in loving yourself and honoring yourself, you don't have to stay stuck there. The other thing that can happen, of course, is when the two decide, you know, that they have had enough and that they do want to better themselves. There's this awareness that something's not working. And I can tell you in my marriage, when my ex-husband and I had facilitation, in fact, with my mentor, we were amazing. But look, my ex-husband's an anomaly. He's awesome. He's divine. I love my ex-hubby very much. He's a wonderful dad. He's a wonderful ex-husband. He will always hold a place in my heart. He's exceptionally aware. But you know what? We weren't compatible on many levels. But when we understood the awareness of what the other was doing and how we were triggering each other, it obviously helped us to get through very difficult times, because what happens is, it's, as you say, it's very much about triggers. And I always say, when the button's being pushed, whose button's being pushed? It's your button. So I can be aware of it and be considerate towards it. But at the end of the day, you've got to figure out. And this is what we do a lot in my coaching and my facilitation, is we chase it down to the main plug point and go, okay, so what's going on there? You'll be surprised. You can, you know, somebody can be triggered by the toothpaste being squeezed in the middle of the tube to an extent that it will cause a fight every time, like a serious fight. And yes, people are going, but why are you sweating the small stuff? We've chased that to, let me tell you, there was nothing small about what that was triggering. But do you think either individual was aware? No, absolutely not. You know, so there is, we all battling our demons, but it's only when we actually decide to take our demons and turn them into angels and take our traumas and turn them into gifts, we continue in this struggle. And I just wasn't prepared to do that anymore.
And I think that's really powerful, is when you know you're being triggered, is to go, but why am I being triggered? Why has this thing got so much power over my psyche and happiness that it's triggering me? And very often it's got nothing to do with the next
person. Never does. Never does.
You.
I've never chased it back in an adult, Nix, where it hasn't gone back to childhood. I'm not saying it can't happen, but it's never happened in my practice that we've chased a trigger like the toothpaste. We're talking in a married couple in their 40s that has gone back to events of the wife when she was 10, 11 years old.
And, you know, this really just embeds for me the massive responsibility we have when we have children. I mean, I know the species is, that's what every species is here to do, is procreate, but it's an enormous responsibility. You know, and it seems that there's an age where the brain is at its most plastic and most vulnerable. And this is where you create a personality and, you know, you set up a person for how are they going to cope in the world. And, you know, conscious parenting is about that. No, there's no perfect parent. You know, we can't be, you know, this Disney-fied creature.
No, it would be boring.
You know, and you also, you know, you what then? What has your child got to fix later on in life?
Exactly. What are they going to learn? No, absolutely.
You have to learn tough lessons. And if you can't protect your kids from everything, but it makes you stop and think. You know, the power of your words, not just to your children, but to other people in your life when that you care about them. It's so important to choose your words with care. Because you are imprinting on another person. We do have that strength of influence. So that's really what keeps coming to the fore when I hear you talking, is we have so much power and we don't use it wisely.
And I love the word conscious parenting, Nix, because it's something so close to my heart. I'm very grateful that Dad and I were always pretty much on the same page when it came to our son. And even when he was tiny, he knew that I would stay home with my son if I had to, if we were going to friends that would have, when I say inappropriate TV on, I mean adult, like not geez, I'm not talking porn for God's sake. I'm talking about not age content, yes, appropriate stuff, because unfortunately, that young brain is exceptionally impressionable from an early age. Even before I became a parent, you know, you'd get the adults, you'd say, guys, don't talk like that in front of the children. They'd go, oh, please, man, they're not even listening, and they don't even understand what we're talking about. Exactly. They are listening, but they don't understand. They're taking it on as something completely different, which starts to form them. Yes. So the environment, you know, we didn't have nerds. Wayne and I, and in fact, up until this day, Wayne being my ex-husband, we never had the news on next, not in the car, not in the house, because there was just no need. There was no need for this negativity in our son's ears, let alone our own ears. Can you protect him from the world? No, we did it age appropriately. And he's a very well-grounded, very aware, wonderful child. I mean, I must say, if he's evidence of the work we've done, I think thus far we've done pretty well. Yeah. So I'm very grateful and very proud about that. But parents are not, I'm sorry, adults are not conscientious of what goes into kids' ears. I mean, the stuff they have on just in the car, people are careless. People are absolutely careless. And as you say, people just want to have, you know, the picket fence, the marriage, the 2.1 children, but they don't actually stop to think of the massive responsibility. And it's the small T's, Nick. The small T's are sometimes even more impactful than the big T's, because the big T's are overt. We can see what's happened. We know somebody's been beaten, abused, whatever. The small T's, we have no idea that even happened.
And we tend to sort of shelve them and go, oh, it's not important. Somebody else is having it worse. So I don't have any right to feel bad about an event which is actually not a massive trauma, but they stack up. They stack up and they cause chaos, and they should be expressed. And there's no trauma, small or big, that doesn't deserve airtime. Mm-hmm. We should never compare ourselves to other people, because to you at that time, especially as a child, it's enormous. Yeah, and just, you know, to your point, I mean, television... I mean, I remember so well, I must have been 10, 9 years old, and we had our Betamax video machine, and we'd go to the video shop and get horror movies. I loved horror movies as a child, and there were no parents around to like go, actually, no, you can't watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street. And I spent good part of my preteen years having sleepless nights because my brain could not differentiate this from reality. Yep. And it really affected me, affected my schoolwork. My parents wouldn't know. They weren't even like, whatever, it's a video, you know. You've got to realize that the juvenile brain literally takes things literally and cannot make sense of the world. We don't have the tools. But yeah, and you know, it also comes back to communication, is when we are having an argument with a spouse in front of a child, is to sit down and sort of unpack that experience with a kid and make sure that they didn't get everything the wrong way. And we're not building monsters in a child's brain. And as an adult as well, we take things the wrong way. I mean, how many times have you had an experience with people and misinterpreted everything? Yeah. And we are so far off reality. It's just one of the tools that I really have found useful for myself is to really admit I don't understand anything about anyone. All my assumptions and interpretations, 9 out of 10 times, are going to be wrong. And it's a relief to know that, because we do default to the negative. We assume the worst. And that's where we build these, I really believe it's one of the ways that we build these codependencies, because you so desperately want to be part of, because that's part of survival. But at the same time, we've got these negative stories going down. So one of the ways is to go, you know what, I don't know. Until I get the facts and I get the black and white truth, everything is up for debate. So there are ways of I've rambled on a bit here, but there's got to start questioning the reality in our brains, because it's based on maps of all sorts of nonsense. And this is the problem that we're dealing with in relationships, in our work relationships, in our relationships with ourselves, with our kids, even with the checkout lady at the supermarket. We don't know what's going through another person's head. Yeah,
absolutely. Lots of faulty software, Nix, lots of faulty software. And, you know, the reality is what you were saying, and it is, it's chicken or egg. So the assumption makes you feel codependent. The codependent makes you make more assumptions. And that's why I so love, which is a very big theme in the triangles model, is expanding awareness in expanding perception. When we understand how we build our subjective worldview, starting all the way back in utero, and how your lenses are different to my lenses, and my microphone, or rather I should say speaker, is different to your speaker. And when we can just stop for a minute and go, let me try and see it from the other person. Let me just try. Because, you know, why is it that if somebody has Alzheimer's or dementia, we accept when they talk shit in our ears? So I'm not saying that everybody has Alzheimer's and dementia, but the reality is we're all in our little dimension, okay, where we're seeing things slightly differently. And that is why I always used to get into trouble for asking lots of questions, but I never stopped, Nix. Why? You know, my worst saying, curiosity killed the cat. No, it didn't. Curiosity engaged and activates dopamine, for goodness sake. So, you know what I mean? Curiosity takes you to the next level and fires up all sorts of wonderful things. Be curious. Get clarity. I mean, you know the Enneagram. We won't obviously get into that. I'm a typical six on the Enneagram. If I don't have clarity, I cannot stop and I cannot make my assessment.
Yeah.
I don't like to assume, because many, many years ago when I was waitressing back in the dark ages, I remember we had this little motivational speech and they said, "And when you assume, all you're doing is you are making an ass of me."
Yes.
And that really stuck with me. And I thought, I don't want anybody to make an ass of me and I don't want to make an ass of anybody else. So let me rather be clear. Am I completely free of assumptions? Of course not. And I do make assumptions. No, and I am wrong. But practicing the awareness and the considering from the other person's perspective really, really is life-changing. Just stopping for that moment and going, okay, wait, hold on. Before I completely react, let me just think about it and see how I can respond.
Yes.
And that's just a tool that, gosh, you don't need to go to a facilitator, psychiatrist, or psychologist to use. I mean, it's something that everybody can do.
Yes, but it's the hardest thing to do, is to pause between stimulus and response. I mean, that's what the Buddha was trying to get right. You know, it's hard to do this.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you're not living up in the mountain.
Exactly. Yeah, no one to respond to. I mean, other than, you know, some ants crawling around. Mm. But it's when you get that right and you realize a person's negative response or whatever response has actually got less to do with you and more to do with them and what they're going through. It's incredibly liberating feeling, because you can hold their opinion and not buy into it, or you can hold the circumstance and not partake in it.
And that's it, Nix. So I always say, try it, you might like it, which I think comes from Dora the Explorer. And the reality is, the more you do it and the more you see the benefits, the more you're going to want to do it, right? It's like exercise. Let's be honest. Nobody gets up in the morning and goes, oh, I can't wait to go half sweat and die in the gym. But once you're there, you're like, this is actually pretty awesome. This is, and afterwards, when you're done, it's exactly the same. I very often liken the brain to two things, a computer and a body. You know, people want the gym body, but they don't want to pick up the weights. Well, honey, then you ain't going to get the gym body. So it's really about practicing it and just trying it out. And you might actually like it, because it's going to serve you. And you and your ego might have a little conversation and go, well, nobody has to know we're doing it. Yes. Feels good. So let's just do it anyway. We won't tell anybody, you know. And you're absolutely right. It's just getting into that, as the triangles model calls it, the gap. Or it's the break state. There's many words. And just kind of assessing, very much a question that I always ask my clients is, do you need to discern between what's your stuff and what's my stuff?
Yeah.
And very often it's not my stuff. And I'm going, oh, dude, sorry, you left something behind. Let me just give it back to you.
I love that.
Off you go. Yo, it's quite heavy. How have you been carrying all this around? You know?
Yes. I love that. So we are heading to our hour mark. I can't believe it. I mean, time really flies.
And with me, Nix, of course we are.
But there's so much more to chat about. So we're going to set up a few more episodes where we can dig into all sorts of topics. I'd like to talk to you about the Enneagram as well. I know lots of people know about the Enneagram, but it's really quite an interesting way of figuring yourself out. And yes, of course, narcissism, which is another totally misunderstood topic. But yeah, if anyone listening wants to get hold of you, all of your contact details will be in the show notes. And is there anything that you can think of that you want to mention just as we wrap up?
You know, just one of my favorite sayings that I always tell everybody, what you don't change, you choose. End of story. It's that simple. Is it simple to do? No, but it is really that simple, Nix. And it's really that, when I read that many years ago, it made such an impact on me. Just a little thought that I'd like to leave people with.
And that really does go back to the fact that you've got the power, you've got the control, and it's all a choice. How you choose to respond in a situation, whatever the situation, gives you the power. So Vilavi, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Nix. Thank you so much. Nix, thank you so much. I loved it. Absolute honor and privilege. You are amazing. I mean, here I am being interviewed by you. Wow.
My pleasure. It's my therapy. So thank you.
It's only a pleasure and an absolute privilege once again. Gratitude. Thank you, Nix.
Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.